Hello and welcome to episode 7 of the second series of Head Mangle, written and performed by Mike Nelson. I'd like to conclude this meeting of the Knights of the Square Table with a radical change of policy. About bloody time and all, Sir Keir Starmer. Thank you, Sir Angela of Rayner. Yes, my bold resolution is that we change the curtains. The curtains? What's wrong with bloody curtains? They're too red. Too red? We've always had red curtains. Not anymore. From henceforth, the curtains will be red and white and blue. Is that your bloody... Sir Wesley Streeting, what ails thee with thy weird, unblinking eyes? My noble liege, I bring you great news. I found it. I found what, Sir Wes of Streeting? The Holy Grail is hidden in a cave in the Red Wall Valley of Bolsover, guarded by a reclusive old man. What's he on about? What Holy Grail? The Holy Grail is the most valuable object in Labourdom, Sir Angela of Rayner. He who possesses it can implement radical socialist policies forever. What's more, it is totally immune to attacks from Sir Murdoch of Mordor. Well, what are we waiting for? Let's go and get the bugger.
Is this the place, Sir Wes of Streeting?
Yes, my liege, this be the place.
It's very northern, isn't it?
So, what's wrong with that?
Nothing, Sir Angela of Rayner. Did I tell you that my father was a toolmaker?
Fakir of Starmer of the Square Timetable is short. To gain the Holy Grail, it must be retrieved before the set of sun.
I see, but what doth ye old focus group say?
Bollocks to focus group. Get in there and go in there and get it.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Are you the holy man that guides the holy grail of socialism?
I am. Come forward, my son.
What is it that dazzling light that shines with the brilliance of a thousand suns?
This is my son is the holy grail of socialism. He who possesses it will be able to enact radical policies without fear or favour.
Incredible, and now it's mine.
Yes, my son. For is it right that the rich get richer? Is it right that the poor get poorer? Is it right that...
Just a second. I recognise that voice. Remove thy hood, old man. Ha ha, just as I thought. It is you, Sir Jeremy of Corbyn.
Yes, what of it? I live in this cave with my companion, Sir Dennis of Skinner, guiding the most sacred object. Now then, you Tory prick.
Then I cannot take it.
Why not? Are you not aware of the limitless power it will bring?
Yes, but if the Daily Mail hear that, I'll be speaking to you. I'm done for.
The Holy Grail, where is it?
I didn't want it. We're doing well in the polls. Anyway, about those curtains.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Burbage Road was quiet. There was no one in the street, no cars, no children playing. At number 10, Mr. Boris looked out of his window. Mr. Boris didn't like his new house. He liked his old house at number 10 Downing Street. But he couldn't live there anymore, so now he had to live here. It was a nice house, but it wasn't as exciting as Downing Street, when all the television people would come and listen to things he had to say. That didn't happen anymore. And this made Mr. Boris sad. To cheer himself up, Mr. Boris decided to go for a walk. His walk took him to a special costume shop. Mr. Boris liked to go in the costume shop. He thought that if he dressed up as someone doing a real job, people would take him seriously. As if by magic, Michael Gove appeared.
"Good morning, sir,"
he said, in his painfully grating posh Scottish accent.
"What costume would you like today?"
Mr. Boris looked around the shop. He loved all the different costumes, some of which he'd worn before. The builder's costume, the policeman's costume, and the white jacket and the little white hat he sometimes wore when he went to visit a pie factory in the north of England. Just then, he saw a crinkled and scruffy-looking suit. It was just like the suit he'd worn when he pretended to be the Prime Minister.
Whipple, Pimple, Whipple, this one, please,
he said. "Certainly, sir," said Michael Gove, who had a strange habit of sniffing and rubbing his nose.
"Go through to the changing room."
In the changing room, Mr. Boris removed his flowery shorts and moth-eaten jumper that made him look like something that had been fly-tipped into an abandoned public toilet on a forgotten section of the A1. And he squeezed himself into his suit. He looked at himself in the mirror and liked what he saw. He was the Prime Minister again.
Brexit, Brexit, Brexit. Hands, teeth, bum. Wibble, wobble, wobble.
Yes, his magic words had come back. Immediately, he jumped out of the changing room to share the wonderful news with Michael Gove. But Michael Gove wasn't there, and Mr. Boris was no longer in the shop. Instead, he found himself in a strange city, where all the buildings had been destroyed, and sounds of bombs and explosions filled the air. It was very loud. Just then, he saw a man wearing a green sweatshirt.
"Hello," said Mr. Boris. "Who are you?"
"Hello, Mr. Boris," said the man. "I am Vladimir Zelensky."
"Blah-blah-blah-blah-slah-blah-blah-blah," said Mr. Boris. "I don't believe we've met."
The man smiled.
"Don't you remember? You came before when you were Prime Minister."
Mr. Boris couldn't remember.
"Yes," he said. "When I was Prime Minister. I'm still Prime Minister. Look, I'm wearing a suit."
"Yes," said Mr. Vladimir. "You are. Can you help?"
"Yes," said Mr. Boris. "What do you want me to do?"
The man told Mr. Boris that some nasty people called the Russians were doing nasty things to Mr. Vlobababa's country. He wondered if Mr. Boris could lend some weapons to help them defend themselves.
"Can you do this, Mr. Boris?" asked Mr. Vlobababa.
Mr. Boris wasn't sure, but he said he could, yes. He said he would do it anyway. He said he would get all his best tanks and guns and aeroplanes and send them to Mr. Vlobomir straight away.
"I don't like bullies," he said. "Let's bash this Russian man on the nose."
"Thank you," said Mr. Vlobomir,
and shook Mr. Boris by the hand. Mr. Boris liked this. He also liked looking into Mr. Vlobomir's large brown eyes. Eventually, after a very long time, Mr. Vlobomir pulled away his hand.
Just then, there was a loud shriek of pain that reminded Mr. Boris of the time he accidentally stuck his finger up Dylan's bum.
Dylan was the name of Mr. Boris's dog. Dylan didn't like Mr. Boris.
"Oh, cripes! What's that ghastly noise?"
asked Mr. Boris.
"Quick," said Mr. Vlobomir. "That siren! The Russians are dropping bombs and we must hide in shelter!"
Mr. Boris followed Mr. Vlobomir to the shelter. It was underground and protected by a large iron door. Mr. Vlobomir knocked on the door. A big man with a bald head answered.
"Quick, sir," he said. "There is little time."
"This is Mr. Boris," said Mr. Vlobomir. "He my friend. Can he come in too?"
"No," said the man. "Shelter is full. He must wait outside."
Mr. Boris didn't like the thought of being outside while the Russians were dropping bombs all over the place.
"Look," he said to Mr. Vlobomir and the bald man. "There's President Biden over there. Look."
The two men looked in the direction that Mr. Boris was pointing. While they did this, Mr. Boris rushed past them and closed the iron door with a metal clank.
"Let us in. The bombs are falling," they shouted.
But Mr. Boris pretended not to hear and laughed.
"Tee-hee," he thought. "I am safe and you're not."
After a little while, all the explosions stopped. Maybe the Russians have stopped dropping bombs, he thought. Carefully, he opened the iron door. A lot of buildings had been destroyed, and the air was thick with smoke. Mr. Vlobomir was no longer there. Instead, he was over there, and over there, and over there.
Cripes, thought Mr. Boris. I like Mr. Vlobomir. What a rotten shame.
Unhappily, he kicked a big round rock. But it wasn't a big round rock. It was Mr. Vlobomir's dismembered head. The head flew into the air and landed into the shopping basket of an off-duty nurse.
Ah! She screamed. Who did this? Who has beheaded head of glorious president?
Just then the ballman came out from beneath a pile of rocks and pointed at Mr. Boris.
Him! He did this!
A big group of people began to run towards Mr. Boris. They all looked very angry. Mr. Boris began to run as fast as his fat little legs could carry him. Just then Michael Gove appeared.
Quick, sir!
Through here, he said, pointing to the door of an abandoned block of flats. Mr. Boris followed him and found himself back in the costume shop.
Phew, he said, that was close. Can I keep the suit?
Yes, said Mr. Michael Gove. Do you want to be Prime Minister again?
Yes, said Mr. Boris, but first I want to have a little sleep.
Back at Burbage Road, all was quiet. Mr. Boris placed the suit into his special dressing-up box, where he kept all the souvenirs from his adventures. It had been a very exciting day. We can't go over it. We can't go under it. We'll have to go through it.
What the... Who are you? What are you doing in my son's room?
Silence.
What? Please, don't shoot.
We are the Wokefinder Generals, and we hereby accuse you of wokery.
What are you on about?
Wokery... An oversensitivity to perceive social injustices that remove all that is good in the world. Judge Cockleshaw, read the charge.
That you, Mad Summerton, has polluted the mind of his son with forbidden texts that do glorify the works of the devil.
Forbidden? He's gone on a bear hunt for Christ's sake.
And blasphemy, mister.
Surely you know that the writer of this profane text is the High Priest of the North London Wokeratory, one Michael Rosen.
The North London what? I got it from the library.
Yes, a place that books alone for free. This goes badly against you, mister. Why do you not read the works of Roald Dahl? Is it that they do not conform to your rigid rules of devilry?
He's five. You wouldn't understand them.
Yet he understands that if you see a bear that you run away like a cowardly snowflake, rather than shooting it dead. Skinning it and turning it into a rug like any good Christian man would do. Pass me the foul text, Judge Williamson. What is the meaning of this? Wishy-washy. Stumble, trip. Stumble, trip. Are these the words you use to conjure Lucifer?
Lucifer? What the fuck are you going on about? Daddy said a naughty word.
Silence! Here, this is what you shall now read to the child.
The Three Gollywogs? What's this racist rubbish?
Aha, then it be true. You are truly affected by the stench of wokery. Edith Blyton speaks the words of goodness.
Judge Cockleshaw, the words of wokery are most definite.
True, Judge Williamson. Fetch the quan.
Quan?
Only those who practice wokery can survive the quan.
I'm a vegan. I eat quan all the time. I eat corn. Corn's nice. Ah! Daddy! Daddy! You've killed my daddy!
Silence, child! And read about the nice gollywogs.
Hello, and due to the international break, there'll be no more Premiership games this weekend. But not to worry, we have a lot of other exciting games for your viewing pleasure. First up is Brecon City versus Turriff United in the Scottish Highland League. Our commentator at Glebe Park is Hamish MacPherson.
Thank you, Gary. Well, there's not much to say. It's been a rather unremarkable afternoon in football. We've only 5 minutes left to play so far. There's been no shots on target from either side. And as it stands, it's going to end up 0-0. Incidentally, the last time these two teams met, it was also 0-0. And quite possibly the time before, it was also 0-0. Maybe the score between Brecon and Turriff always ends up 0-0. Who knows? All I can say is the most exciting moment of the game came midway through the first half, when a peculiarly large seagull landed on the crossbar of Brecon's goal. It stayed around for about 10 minutes before letting out a desultory squawk and flying away in disgust, much like most of the crowd of 323 have already decided to do. Anyway, Turriff now had the ball. Williams passes it to McLeod, who kicks it straight into touch. My word, that was an absolutely dreadful pass. But I can have the throw, calling Mr. Jones, who makes a small run then trips over his own feet. McLeod takes the ball and also trips up over his own feet and begins to pound the frozen Turriff with all the fury of a petulant toddler who's messed his pants but refuses to be changed. Oh, it looks like the seagull has returned and is about to... But no. What's this? A strange ethereal glow has descended over Glebe Park. It's beautiful. It's though the northern lights have mixed with a rainbow and are showering the sky with a prism of magnetic majesty. And now, from the kaleidoscope of kinetic energy, emerges a huge metallic disc that looks as though it's a spaceship from a distant galaxy. It's landed in the middle of the centre circle. The referee looks at his watch. Surely there's now going to be some stoppage time. The door of the spaceship is now opening, accompanied by a sound reminiscent of 1,000 angels singing in heavenly perfection. It's a beautiful sound, and certainly beats the boos and groans I've heard from both sets of supporters this afternoon. And perhaps, unsurprisingly, a large alien steps from the craft. I would say he's about 7 feet tall and completely devoured of genitalia. He would make a magnificent goalie, that's for sure. Though I'm not sure whether teams in the Highland League are allowed to sign beings from another planet. Which is a shame, as he's certainly a remarkable specimen of manhood. Personhood. Thinghood. He appears to be saying something, and what it seems to have a powerful effect on the 22 players who bow down in supplication to their otherworldly master. And now he's firing a red laser beam from his globular eyes and turning each player into a shaft of pure light, which is causing them to rise about 10 feet or so off the ground before being transported into the craft. He appears to be stealing the teams, which certainly is unusual, considering the way they've played this afternoon. And there they have it. Both sets of players from Brecon and Turriff have been transported from the field of play by a giant extraterrestrial who is currently transmitting his thoughts into every member of the stadium, including yours truly. He is telling us that the only way humanity can survive is if we embrace a form of collective consciousness that unites everything, living, dead, animate, inanimate, men, women, children, everything. He wants us to succumb to a vibrational force that will allow to journey into space, both inner and outer, for all eternity. It's quite a thought. And there they go, the aliens, a grand group of lads. Well, this certainly represents a dilemma for the referee. He goes over to the fourth official. Yes, just as I thought, he blows the whistle. And that's it. Brecon City 0, Turriff United 0. Back to the studio.
Hi, Dave. And how are you today?
Oh, you know, so-so. They're threatening to cut off me lecky, but what can you do?
Bloody rotten sods. Terrible, that is. Anyway, let's have a little look at what you've got. 4 tins of beans, sliced white, 2 jars of...
Sorry to interrupt, Maureen, but it all looks a bit different.
What does?
The food bank.
Oh, yeah, we've been taken over.
Taken over?
Mr. Armstrong?
Yeah. Who are you?
Allow me, I'm Henry Leighton Jones. I'm the new bank manager.
Bank? What bank?
This, the food bank. It's been taken over by NatWest. Would you mind stepping into my office for a moment?
Why? What's it about?
It won't take a moment. Please,
take a seat. So I expect you'll have noted a few changes since your last visit on, let's see, the 6th of March. Yeah, you've done it up.
We most certainly have, Mr. Armstrong. Well spotted. We have, as you so charmingly point out, done it up. New floor tiles, suspended ceiling, a lovely leather chair that spins round. Watch! We've even got a new logo. Fat West, your first choice for dietary needs. Good, isn't it?
I thought it was NatWest.
We are, but we don't want to confuse the two. Plus, it's a clever pun. NatWest, Fat West. Eating excessively makes you fat.
Right. What's all got this got to do with me?
Well, you see, Mr. Armstrong, the changes you've noticed don't come cheap. Someone has to pay for them. I'd like to have a little chat about your loan, if you don't mind.
What loan?
The food you've been borrowing. You've come here since the summer of 2021.
Yeah, since I had to quit my job to look after my wife. She had a stroke. They stopped her benefits.
My condolences.
She's not dead.
Only a matter of time. Now, what we need to discuss is your repayment plan. Let's see if it can create something that suits your needs.
What do you want about it? It's a charity.
Yes, but we have to make a profit, otherwise we'll be unable to improve our customer service. So let me see, at a loan rate of 8%, you owe us 4 loaves of bread, 4 tins of beans, 4 tins of soup, and a packet of loo roll, which, as luck would have it, is the contents of your basket. If you don't mind, I'll take that.
What? That's my shop for the week?
Was. Anyway, at least you know you've paid back your loan. You'll be free to take out a new loan in 2 weeks' time.
2 weeks? What am I supposed to do until then?
I've no idea. Would you like a free pen?
No, fuck off.
Well, I must say.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to say goodbye to our dear friend, Norman House. As you'll know, Norman spent most of his life working as a parking attendant at a large multi-story car park. A job he claimed to hate with a passion, never before witnessed by man or beast. So I'm sure he won't mind us glossing over this sorry 40-year chapter in his life. As he would no doubt have attested himself, jog on, Muppet. No, the real passion in Norman's life lay, in the past 10 years, with his prolific use, some might say addiction, to social media, particularly to the site of Twitter. In the space of this time, Norman's profile, Norman says, attracted 23,000 followers. Admittedly, he did follow 50,000 himself, but that isn't to detract from the incredible influence he had over the thoughts and feelings of others. Let us not forget the wonderful way he organised many of his followers to call a promising female MP vile and abusive terms. Such was the brilliance of his attack that this MP in question had a nervous breakdown and left politics for good. Hashtag sad lefty witch. And his work didn't go unnoticed, as, on one memorable occasion, his tweet making a joke about a dying migrant was shared by none other than Nigel Farage. A tweet that got over 27,000 likes. LMAO. That certainly was a day that would live long in Norman's memory. TBH, it was his greatest achievement. So, there you have it. Norman House. Single. Survived by no one. No friends in IRL. But a legend on his own Twitter feed. Hashtag
dead.
I'm sorry, you appear to be the only mourner. Did you know Norman very well?
Who?
Norman House, the man who passed away.
Never heard of him, mate. I've come to measure for the new carpets. I just didn't want to interrupt.
Oh, I see. Lol. You have been listening to Head Mangle, which is recorded live in our Maidervale studio with the support of the Head Mangle production team. Thank you and good night.